Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I'm talking with my buddy, Brian. And Brian is a metal artist and fabricator. And his shop is named Steel Elements Fabrication. And I'm going to just pause again and redo that, Brian, because that was fucking awful.
And, God, I heard that at the end of it.
Yeah, no, that was bad. Steel. Brian Breton. He's a
steel artist and metal fabricator. That works.
Known as Steel Elements Fabrication on Instagram.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I am talking with my buddy, Brian, and he is a artist, metal artist and fabricator. Wow, I fucked it up again. We're just going to push through, though. We're just going to push through, people. He is a steel artist and fabricator who goes by the name Steel Elements Fabrication on Instagram. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself, bud?
I'm obviously not doing too good.
It's all good.
That was terrible, but we're going to keep going.
I like it. Truck through, right?
Like I told you, actually, we kept having to push this off. We pushed this off 3-4 times because I haven't been getting much sleep for some reason. I don't know if it's a change of season or what, but it's absolutely just killing me.
No, I feel you, man. I always have that sense of dread going from the summertime rolling into fall. It's like fall is so beautiful out here in New England, but at the same time, what's after that winter? And, you know, I mean, I've been in New England for my whole life, but I don't like the white stuff, man.
I actually prefer the snow because I'm fat, and I like it when it's cold.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, cold is – I don't mind the cold. I just hate that I can't do as many outdoor activities. I'm not a snowboarder. I'm not a skier. I'll go sledding, but I always end up messing myself up when I do that, so
How have you lived in New England your whole life and you've never skied or snowboarded?
Oh, I mean, I have. That's how I know it's not for me.
Good point. I used to ski. I wasn't very good at it, though. I was really good at falling down.
Oh, that's, like, the best part of it, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
So I've actually known Brian for quite a while. We went to school together. I don't remember if we met in elementary school or middle school. I think we met in elementary school, actually.
I believe so.
With the island, right?
Yeah. So we definitely met there, for sure.
We met in elementary school and then reconnected to high school. And then randomly online, I just kind of discovered him. Or maybe he discovered me. I don't really remember.
You put out an open channel like, hey, anybody that wants to come and collab and this, that, the other. I'm like, hey, Nick's a cool guy. Let me drop on that line and see what he's got to say.
That's true.
We're here now.
I am a cool guy. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But I'm very surprised to see that you went into this kind of metal art and fabrication route. How did you start getting into that?
Honestly, I think what it really comes down to is I've always been into steel. When at a very young age, in the summertime during like high school and stuff. It's like summer vacation starts, boom, I'm on the job site. My father used to work for, he's retired now, he used to work for a few different metal stud framing and drywall companies, and just kind of built my steel carpentry skills. And I've always loved just building and making and creating, and I've always kind of geared that towards, or that's always been geared towards like the artistic side and making stuff that I personally feel might be either pretty or look awesome. But for this particular venture, it's just what really started it. The first thing was my son's, like, I don't know if you know what they're called, but you know those things? They're like a three wheel, like a big wheel, but the back wheels, like you can drift with them.
Yep.
Yeah, I broke it with my fat ass. So I was like, oh, crap. And this thing costs like $300. So I'm like, all right. Oh, no, it was a super nice one. And I'm like, god damn. So like the whole like the rear axle just sheared right off of the main body that goes out from, sits under the steel. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy a welder. Bought a welder, and I was like, hey, this is pretty fun. So from there, I just kind of, a Harbor Freight welder, by the way. I mean, it was cheap as all hell. That's the one I still use to this day.
I feel like you could have just, for like, the cost of a welder, you probably just could have bought a new one.
No, they had their I think it's the MIG 170 on sale for like from like 180 to 150, and I was like, yeah, that one, sure. And yeah, then I had to wire 220 into my workshop because I had no idea that it was a 220 machine. No big deal. But yeah, no, and so from there, I just kind of started making stuff. It's really easy for me working where I work. We have a lot of just metal laying around the shop on my day job, and I just start asking, hey, can I take this home? Yep, no problem. All right, cool. Bring it home, start making some stuff. Butterflies, cool spinny shit like you saw that we were talking about earlier. Yeah, wall art, everything like that. But yeah, no, it's been a long time coming, I feel, for me, getting into an actual like business venture and actually making something that I am proud enough of and competent enough of to be able to put out there and actually ask for money for it.
Have you always been like an artistic person?
Yeah, I would say so. My mom always said that I was her dreamer. Out of the three kids, I'm the youngest, and I've always been that kid. I've always been the kid to have all these crazy outlandish ideas and things like plans for the future and stuff, and almost every single one of them involve some sort of artistic field or something like that. I was a choir nerd for all of high school and stuff. I did music theory classes. I've been painting miniatures my whole life. I can't draw worth shit, but if there's like an already established template, sure. But no, yeah, metal just seemed like a really good fit because I already know how it works and how it feels and what kind of how kind of properties it has and what happens when you're doing this to it and that to it. So I feel like metal is just a natural inclination. I almost went with wood and made that my preferred material, but that's for pussies. So no offense to the wood
Hell, yeah.
out there. Your work is gorgeous.
No, full offense.
But yeah, I think that's pretty. So to get really to the root of your question, I know it's a long-winded answer, but yeah, no, I just honestly, I had an opportunity. I had some finances set aside, so I was able to justify being able to purchase like the saw, the grinders, the plasma cutter, welder, all of these different types of tools, and just kind of built up my little shop that I got over here, in the house, and yeah, now I'm here just making stuff, selling a few things online. Mostly I just sell stuff through the DMs, trying to get an Etsy set up. It's a very new venture for me. So that's why I really do appreciate you having me on, honestly.
Oh, no, man. I love having you on. Especially, I mean, you do make some really beautiful stuff, and I would definitely encourage people to go check it out. There's a lot of the stuff that you're making right now is, like, smaller scale, I would say. Is that kind of the area that you're going to, like, stay in, or do you ever plan on going bigger? Like,
oh, hell yeah, man. I want to, I've already have, like, ideas. I want to make a giant, because I'm a huge nerd, especially gaming nerd. And one of my favorite game titles out there is Legend of Zelda. And I just want to make, like, an 8-foot-tall Triforce with a Master Sword just plopping through it. That's, like, my dream project. Yeah, just have
rad.
That. Oh, dude, you're gonna have to crane that puppy in wherever it goes. I hope they take it and they put it in the Nintendo headquarters in freaking New York City.
Let me know and I'll help you paint it.
There you go. Yeah, because I'm not. Yeah, we were actually talking about that stenciling, man. It's freaking hard. I think it's just I'm not patient enough for it. When you weld something, boom, it's done. It's cooled down. The worst thing that happens, you burn yourself. With painting, if you're not patient enough, all of a sudden you're redoing the whole damn thing. So
are you noticing that, like, even though, like, in the past you've worked kind of with metal in, like, a more, not industrial, but a more, like,
commercial.
commercial setting. Are you noticing that there's a lot of carryover from that into what you're doing, or is it mostly completely new?
I mean, a lot of it's really new. I would say there's some carryover, like I was saying before, like just how the metal like acts and what I know is going to do. If you heat it up, what type of things are going to happen to it. Like, so if I'm working with galvanized, I mean, obviously welding galvanized, you got to be safe. But, you know, if you heat it up too much, you start to rip the coating off, and then now you're having to put an actual, like, enamel finish on it and stuff because it's going to rust up something that you don't want to rust or what have you. But, I mean, honestly, I really feel like it's pretty much all new to me. I've approached every single new skill that I have to learn with, like, all right, I'm learning how to do, let's say plasma cutting, because that was one of the biggest ones for me. Simple process, right? Seems pretty easy. Well, it is, but when you're trying to freehand stuff or even doing it on a template, it's just a massive learning curve with everything. And so for me, approaching everything one step at a time, each little thing, and not just, all right, I'm going to learn how to do this, 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 and this all at the same time. Otherwise, I would never get anything done.
That's kind of a weird thing for any new skill is, like, when you look to see, like, I'm sure you have people you look up to who do the same thing that you do, you know, and you see the stuff that they're doing, and you're like, man, I would love to be able to do that. And you're over here, like, on level one, you know what I mean? And they're,
yeah,
like, 100. You're like, how the hell do I get, like, from here to here? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to the point where just where my – where, like, one of my signatures is the butterflies that I make. And – just making those from the first one that I made, which I'm actually looking at right now, it's here in my kitchen. From the first one that I made to the ones that I now sell, I would have never had thought that either it had happened as quick as it did, but just that I would have gotten to the point where it's like, okay, yeah, that is mint. That's stellar. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So for me, it's the maker's curse, right? Every little imperfection, you're going to see it, and the customer is probably not going to see that.
Exactly. The customer doesn't care.
It's
not that they don't care. It's just that they don't – a lot of times customers don't know what they're looking at.
Right.
Like, they don't understand why that would be an imperfection, you know what I mean? But you do.
Oh.
You're like, oh, I know that, you know, this may have happened because the metal heated up too much, or like, oh, right there is because – you know, I lost gas for a minute on my weld and like, you can see those things, but to the person looking at it, they probably don't know why it's doing that, or they would have just made whatever it was themselves.
Right. Exactly. And that was one of the main reasons, like right what you just said there, they would just make it themselves. This is not everybody can just do this stuff. Cause number one, you have to have the machinery, right? You have to have the welders, plasma cutters, saws, grinders, whatever, the tool. You need to be tooled up. Not only that, you have to have the skill set. So, and that's kind of actually how I started a little bit when I made this company. Everybody wanted me. All my friends, all my family were like, hey, I got this, you know, railing, or I got this chair. Or I remember I was at a gas station, and this guy heard me talking to one of my coworkers about what I was doing, and he's like, hey, I got a bobcat you can weld up, you know, the bucket's all jacked up. Yeah, that's how we talked, by the way. and yeah, I just, like, that was kind of how it started, I guess, for like the first week. And then I was just like, man, I hate that. That is boring. I don't want to freaking just sit there and weld a gap up. I mean, it's not bad, it was just not what I wanted to do,
right?
So,
but also, it's one of those things, because like, I know how you feel, because like, I love painting. I love getting trucks looking nice.
Yeah.
I love it. Are there some trucks – are there some things that it's hard to get excited about after doing it 2,000 times? You know what I mean? Like, am I always jazzed up to stand a dumb truck? No, I'm not.
No. I can't imagine that would be fun.
I stand dumb trucks in my dreams. I've stand so many dumb trucks. There were several years where I did nothing but eat, sleep, and breathe dumb trucks. And so to get excited to do something like that is hard. And then at the same time, you know, like, you need those things to keep producing money, right? To create cash flow. So
100%.
They're really excited about.
Yeah. And I still take jobs like that here and there where somebody, like a repair work. And that's what I still says on my Instagram header, you know, hey, a metal fabricator, you know, repair and stuff like that, because those jobs do pay really well. But I want to do what I want to do. So,
what's going to kind of probably be, and I don't know this to be true, but my guess is that what's going to probably happen to you and happens to a lot of artists is they get, like right now, you were just talking about your metal butterflies. You know, those are probably still a lot of fun and stuff. And then eventually that becomes something you don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, well, I made 10 at once. don't get me wrong, I was stoked. Somebody wanted 10 of these things, but I was just like, by the end of the process of just cutting them out, I was like, okay, all
right. Right, because it's no longer about the artistic. It's no longer about the, like, discovery and the uncovering. Like, you've already uncovered this, and now you want to move on to the next thing.
Exactly, yeah. And that's why I've been moving into, like, a bunch of, like, stenciling, like I was saying. Like, getting all of these really cool wall art shapes, or even if it's just a circle, and you put something really, some really cool design on there with paint. That's just a new venture, a new step in this journey. And it's been a lot of, it's always frustrating. It's always going to be frustrating because you're never going to get it right the first time. I mean, you may get it right the first time, but that's far and few between. So you just have to keep plugging along. So for me, I love that, but at the same time, it may be a little disheartening. And I think that's where maybe a lot of people stop is, at those real, like, it's like a roadblock after roadblock, but that's just the stuff you got to push through to get to the juicy center, if you will, which is whatever you like to do. Whatever.
All right, this is rated PG, buddy. I don't know what you think you're coming on about.
My apologies, viewers of the younger variety.
I hope not. I am curious, like, do you... You don't know everything, right, already? So, like, what are you using to learn? Do you have people you can kind of lean on to kind of teach you? Or are you mostly just kind of winging it? Are you using YouTube and the internet to try and figure this stuff out?
Mostly YouTube. YouTube is amazing. For anybody that's trying to get into something that they don't know how to do it, just freaking put in a YouTube search or even just a Google search. And if you don't find, like, a thread or a forum or something because I can read a hell of a lot faster than I can watch a video, right? And as you know, time is, like, a huge commodity in these types of things. But
especially
if I can't
skip around a video.
What was that?
Especially when you're trying to skip around a video. Like, if you already know,
right.
You get a 20-minute video and they got, like, a 4-minute intro, so you got to skip that. And then, like, you got to skip the stuff you already know.
Exactly, yeah. So I do try to find a lot of, like, you know, just forums or open, you know, discussions online. But videos are really nice, especially when you have a particular thing that you kind of really need that visual aspect of the learning process. And I am a very visual learner. But everything that I've done here that I've been doing, aside from obviously the stuff that I learned out in the field, you know, doing, like, steel carpentry and stuff, is all self-taught, just online. Trial and error, hey, this doesn't work, but this does, and just making my way through all of those different crazy stuff that ends up making something look pretty.
Are you also do metal fabrication for your day job, correct?
I do, yeah. I moved on from working in the field setting, just driving to different job sites here and there, to now I work for a company where we make prefab trusses and wall panels, dormers, light monitors, all sorts of crazy stuff, gazebos. It's usually mostly commercial stuff, so hospitals, schools. We actually got to work and build a building for in Maine where they were doing emergency test strips sites, like for the production of those test strips for the COVID-19 test for Abbott Lab.
Oh, that was cool.
It was cool. It was hectic, though.
What did you make? What did you make there?
We basically just made the prefabricated trusses and panels, like wall panels, for the building itself.
They put up a whole building?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what happened? The tents and stuff. But it makes sense when you think about it, because when they're making those test strips, and everything needs to be like an airlock, airtight, like super like high grade. I don't know what the terminology is, but just like a medically sealed room, I guess, is the best thing that I can come up with. So
yeah.
It kind of makes sense when you think about it. They're like, okay, we're pouring a foundation. We're doing this. Yeah.
That's wild. I didn't know they made a – I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like you said, you need, like, a very highly specified thing. But, I mean, it just seems weird that they would – like, how fast can you put up a building, you know?
Pretty quick when you have it was a massive joint effort between the metal distributor, the install crews, and then us, obviously, and the general contractor on site. By the time we were finishing a group of like 40 trusses and like maybe like 20 wall panels, they were getting shipped out the next day on a truck, and on site there were guys building them, getting them up and ready. So we were, from that first delivery going into the next set, it was like just bang, 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 like every day, just going hard, 10, 12 hour days. That was Memorial Day weekend. We worked through the whole entire Memorial Day weekend. It was wild.
That's
so I definitely had to put some of my art on hold for sure, because it wasn't like I was coming home after that feeling like I was ready to do more work.
That was kind of what I was leading into. Do you like, so after working 8 hours a day, like do you get bored with it? Like is it weird
with my work at, with my day
your
job?
Hobby?
Or are you saying, do I get bored with my day job, or do I get bored with it?
Do you just get bored doing it in general? Because, I mean, like, you go to work all day, and then you do metal fabrication, and then you come home all night and do metal fabrication. Or
Absolutely not.
To love your job more because you're doing something that you enjoy.
I really do enjoy it. I fell in love with it once I started. Like, the first bead I threw down, it was awful. I still have the piece of metal hanging up in my shop. But I fell in love with it. I've, like, every single aspect of, there's a guy on YouTube, it's This Old Tony, and there's another guy, AVE.
This Old Tony?
Who is it?
Did you say This Old Tony?
Yeah, like, This Old Tony, like the, what is that a reference to?
Tony,
this
like
old
the
house. That's a reference to This Old House, that old, like, HGTV show back in the day. But, yeah, no, and they have so much information, and just learning every single little stuff that I don't own a lathe, but I could tell you a whole bunch about them.
Fuck yeah.
Same thing with the magnetic drill press. I don't own one, but I could tell you a whole bunch of shit about them. Just learning all of this different. I love knowledge. I've always loved knowledge. And when it's directly correlating with something that I'm doing and that I love doing, I mean, that's the best, right?
100%.
Yeah.
And so would you say that, like, it kind of makes you better at your job, being able to do this kind of stuff at the house? Like, it just seems like, no offense, and I'm just trying to understand where you're coming from. Like, when I come home at night, the last thing I want to do is work on my car.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I guess, like, if you're doing kind of like a more – kind of, it is something you enjoy more because it's not really the same thing, right? I mean, like, you're
right,
not.
Right, yeah. And that's what I was going to say. It's definitely, it's different. And that's the thing. Like, when I go to work, I have the blue, the, you know, I have to take a look at the architectural blueprint. Hey, what's shipping first? This stuff. All right, we're going this way. This is the shipping order. This is what we got to get out first. All right, here's the cards. Hey, guys, here, take this. I'm not the foreman, but I am one of the leads there. So, like, I work very closely with the foreman, who really dishes out most of the work, but we're so busy nowadays that it's like, here, Brian, here's these three jobs. Take care of it. Okay, boss. But it's different. So I have a massive separation from what I do at my day job to what I do at my workshop at home. And it's great because I feel like when I walk into my shop, it's just like, it's my man cave. There's no TV. There's no nothing. I just have a speaker, and I just stream podcasts or, you know, Joe Rogan or what have you. That's a podcast.
Yes, it is.
Well, it's on YouTube, so I didn't consider it that way. But And I'll just listen to whatever I want to listen to, further educate myself on other stuff, listening, and just making. Sometimes I'll make something, and it won't even sell. Like, it's not even something that I want to sell. Like, I made a fucking Batarang the other day just because I always wanted a Batarang, and I've never had one.
Who doesn't want a
Exactly. And that puppy, there's a video on my Instagram of me just winging that thing into a quarter-inch thick piece of plywood. And that plywood just, like, bounces back off of this, like, this sled that we have, the metal sled that we have leaning on. And when I watched that video, I was like, yes. That is exactly what I wanted. I'm just imagining that going into a bad guy's face and just Batman, like, just, yeah, he's sleeping. That's just him. It's just him sleeping. Looking at me so tuckered out. I can't take credit for that. That's a College Humor bit.
This got dark real quick.
Real quick.
Real dark real quick. What is, like, your process of developing, like, a new product that you're coming out with? Do you take into account, like, the ease in which you'll be able to reproduce it after the fact? Or is, like, you're more thinking of, like, one-off things that just, and then afterward, it kind of comes together that you can rebuild, kind of mass, quote-unquote, mass produce them a little bit?
I do now. I do think about that process beforehand and whether or not it's going to be able to be redone, like, reproduce it easily. But I would, like, for example, you were mentioning those scissors that I had made. And those scissors are a nightmare.
Well, hold on. Let's describe them. So he made this wicked cool sign that's, like, a giant pair of scissors. Actually, it looks giant. I don't know how big they are, actually. They must be, like a foot or so long.
About, yeah. A little bit more than a foot, yeah.
So there's, like, this giant pair of scissors, and then it has, like, these really cool, like, vines kind of wrapping up through them. And it's on, like, a wood base. It's, like, it's super cool. And I would definitely just go in and check it out. Because
that one looks great, but boy, was it a pain in the ass. And that one I actually made as a gift for shout out to Salty Hair Wagon, Deanna. She does great work. She's a mobile hairdresser. And if you live in the western New Hampshire or eastern Vermont area, she'll definitely come and do a social distance. I guess you can't really be social distance for haircuts. So yeah, she's great, and we made that for her because she was a friend of my lady's, and she just came down, cut the whole family's hair, and I was like, all right, because she said she was going to do it for free, so I'm like, all right, I'm giving her something. So I made those, and then I actually had a few other requests for that. I've had three other requests for those, and I did make them, but not for free that time.
How many hours went into those things?
Dude, those things are like a five-hour process. And I know that doesn't seem like a lot, but when you come home from work and you only have maybe 3 hours until your body says no mas, it takes a while. But,
well, not only that, but the first time probably wasn't 5 hours. The first time
first time was like 12.
That was like a lot of hours, and then like now you've got to where you can do it in five.
Oh, absolutely. And that's not something I can cut with the plasma cutter, because if I make a template, that's not something that I can really transfers well from a template, because you have a distance that's withheld from the outside edge of the tip of your plasma cutter to the center cutting torch area.
Yep.
And that always amplifies, makes everything bigger. So when you make a template, you have to account for that. With scissors, it's such a really, like, nitty-gritty kind of thing. You have to have all these, like, perfect points, and if one line is not right, just doesn't look good, or so I ended up cutting all of that with a grinder. So those scissors were literally cut out with a grinder, and then I drilled out the holes after that.
Fuck that.
Yeah,
I would have said, sorry, looks like you're cutting our hair for free.
Yeah, seriously. But no, I mean, nowadays though, I'm definitely keeping more of an eye on what I can make that's going to be easily reproducible, because I am here to, you know, make money, make a better life for myself and my kid, my family and my kids, everything. Just trying to figure out, not necessarily what's going to sell the best, but if I can reproduce it, if I can make it again, or even if it's not something like that, is it a passion project? I do a lot of passion projects still, too, which is nice. I allot myself some of that time throughout the week to just work on something. Like, for example, I'm working on, it's once again on my Instagram, but it's like a half man, half, or part man, part cow, part praying mantis kind of monster thing. So, yeah, I have a really morbid, like, fixation on, like, horror and, like, just nasty, disgusting stuff like that, so.
Like very Lovecraftian.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually inspired from the SCP universe. It's a, we're going to, we could go down a freaking rabbit hole with that, but.
What's SCP?
An SCP, so SCP stands for Secure, Contain, and Protect. And it is a fictitious, thank God it's fictional, but it's a fictional universe where there's an organization called the SCP organization, amongst a few other ones. But basically it lives, the universe lives in a forum format online, and people can just, hey, this is SCP, one of the most famous ones is 173, where, oddly enough, it's a piece of art made by a Japanese artist, where if you don't look at it, if you're not directly looking at it, even if you blink, that thing can move like 3 meters a second, so it will just end up killing you.
That was that's like the angels in Doctor
that's
Who.
That's exactly where, yeah, the weeping angels in Doctor Who. That is the 100% where that's.
Wrap in, guys. We're about to get nerdy.
Oh God, yeah, no, I mean, you're
someone
talking to me.
Give us a wedgie after listening to this.
I know all the mechanics and stuff. They're like, what the hell is this crap?
I know the feel. You carry on. I'm into it.
Oh yeah, and so it's got a bunch of different like really cool stories about all sorts of crazy things, and whether it's an anomaly, they're all called anomalies, and whether it's an anomalous book that when you read it, like there's a medical book, when you read it, when you're reading the symptoms of whatever particular disease or disorder or whatever it is, you immediately start to take like get those symptoms and everything, stuff like that. There's another one, there's a book that when you walk up close to it, you refuse to, like, you cannot, you're compelled to just cut yourself open and start writing it in your own blood. It's super dark until you die.
And so you made one of them? I don't know, man. I probably...
My own, yeah. My own SCP. I call it a Skinner because when it goes out and kills everything, kills what it wants, it's taking the organs from, you know, a human or whatever it ends up killing, replacing those organs for itself, and then also replacing the skin patches and stuff so it's all, like, patchy and everything. He's not done yet. I put him away for a little bit, but I still love him.
Yeah, probably should lock him up before you go. I fucking slap him in a safe. I don't know if I want something like that fucking living in my house.
I know, seriously. But yeah, that's just a morbid, twisted personality that I have. I mean, it's not. I'm a very likable, agreeable person.
It's weird because you're always so nice and kind.
Yeah, I hate confrontation, and I don't like to make anybody upset. So it's definitely, I have a very different internal monologue, I guess.
It's funny that I'm very similar. I don't really like confrontation, and I've actually noticed, so...
Which is funny, because we both are, like,
that's
one of the things that we met on, like, that we came together on was you and your boxing and me and my judo.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It seems like most the people who I've met who are the least violent in my life are probably people who fight.
yeah, honestly. And that's and I think that is just part of the nature, is like people who know and respect what violence is, or like know how violence goes down and what it looks like, respect so much more their fellow human being, because they know what comes next afterwards.
Right. And then also you know that you don't actually know what that person is capable of.
Oh, absolutely. It's some of the most... Like unassuming people will just mess you up.
Yeah, exactly. Because you and me have both, probably, I'm sure that we both know people who do not look like there much, and then we'll just fucking waste you.
Yes. No, absolutely. I actually, there's this one kid back in the day. Oh, God, what was his last name? Well, I'll just say his first name anyways. But this kid, Daryl, he was like 5 foot nothing, but would just twist you up in a pretzel. And I actually met this kid. It was we were talking about the other time was at Jimmy Pedro's gym down in Wakefield, Mass. But he's like, oh, my God, he was so tiny. And it didn't matter, like, at all.
Was he a judo guy or a jiu-jitsu guy?
Yeah. Well, he was he's actually from Russia. And he was coming down there to train during the summer camps when I was going down the train.
Russian fighters are a whole different fucking breed. If you guys aren't fighters and you fucking get some Russians in there, it's fucking weird.
Yeah, no. So he's a sambo guy, which is basically, it's very similar to judo. Even Brazilian jiu-jitsu is similar to judo, I think.
Well, sambo is kicking and punching also too, right?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like pancrase where they have some open hand strikes. I'm not 100% sure, but.
And I know they can do leg locks. They're real big on leg locks.
Yeah, there's no leg locks in judo. None of that. Which I always thought was dumb. But
is there, well, there's not even, in judo, there's not much ground grappling, is there?
Oh, God, yeah. That's how I won 90% of my matches. Yeah.
I thought it was mostly throws, no?
Yeah, yes. I think judo is best known for all those, like, fantastic throws. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Cara Parisian. He's probably, well, aside from Ronda Rousey, whom actually I met, I know, kind of, sort of. But she trained with Jimmy Pedro down there as well, as long as with Rick Hahn. I don't know if you know who that is.
Nope.
Former Bellator middleweight champion.
I think it was
middleweight. He's a monster, by the way. But this guy, Cara Parisian, he, aside from Ronda Rousey, I would say probably the most prolific UFC or MMA fighter that practices judo. And whenever I watch him, like, just land a nice, like, there's an Ogoshi or Ippon Sayanagi, all these different names, just, oh. And if you commit to those throws and you, like, drill somebody in there and you power drive your shoulder right into their chest, I mean, it takes so much out of you. That's why when I look at, like, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and people pulling guard, I'm like, God.
It's safer.
Right?
Well, I have actually noticed, or I don't know if this is true. I don't keep a close eye on jiu-jitsu anymore, but I seem to remember that there was a lot less guard pulling. Like, there was a time when people were pulling guard. That was, like, what they did. I used to do that all the time.
It makes sense.
And then it seems like it moved away from it.
Yeah, I hope so. Just because of all of the stuff I've been doing with the business and everything, I'm not going to the gym and training at all now. But
I haven't boxed in years. I just started lifting again for, like, the first time in a very
long time. Yeah, I know you're saying that. Good for you, though, man. That's the way to be.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. I mean, my numbers are absolute trash right now, but I'm hoping that I can get up there a little bit again. I'll probably never be back where I was, but I can try to be better than I was today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%, and that's what it's all about. Absolutely. Yeah, but no, guard pulling, I mean, I hope that it's not a thing as much. I mean, it makes sense if you're comfortable on your back or off your back, like, and that's where your comfort zone is. Sure, go ahead, pull guard. Just never was for me. Also, shout out to another guy. Yeah, we're going to have a shout out counter for the podcast, but guy Adam Bradley, you can find him on Instagram. Sensational Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, goes around the world competing, and he trained right out of here. And I'm not in Manchester anymore, but he used to train right out of Manchester with Nate Lamont, with Burgess MMA. Thank you. And he taught me so much about just what he is Adam Bradley.
Yeah. I knew a lot of the Burgess guys, but I didn't know if any of them.
Yeah, well, you know, so you have to know Tim Caron, of course.
Yeah, I know Tim, and I know Jay, I know
yep.
Nate, I know, I don't even know who's in Burgess anymore, but I knew a lot of those guys because they were coming to the gym to train with Vaca.
Yep.
Team Link for a while, and then for Bob stuff too.
Oh yeah, all those guys are sensational guys. If you, if anybody listening is in the area in New Hampshire, that's Burgess MMA. That's where it's at. They know what's up.
Murphy's Boxing, Burgess MMA.
All of that. Seriously.
Kyle Breer from Veritas Training.
Yep. Hell, you can even go check out one of my old judo coach, Robert Proxa, over at Manchester Police Athletics League. That's where he's at right now. And he'll talk to you in very heavy Polish accent and tell you, no, it's all wrong. It's all wrong. No, this.
Did they have judo at MPEL?
Yeah. That's what it only started from when it used to be when I was training with I followed Robert wherever he went. And it used to be at Checkmate Self-Defense. It used to be over by, like, that Vertical Horizons or Vertical Dreams or whatever in the mill buildings in Manchester. Yep. And then one of the Manchester police officers that was working there was like, hey, we have a gym and we have more than enough slots available for you guys to just come and use the space. And just grew from there, and that was awesome.
Yeah, no, that is awesome.
Yeah.
And how come you stopped going? Just ran out of time, or was it just like a time thing? Or
I joined the Marines.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was in the Marines for about 4 years.
I didn't fucking know that. When did that happen?
Early 2000, what was it, 2009, I think.
Wow, I had no idea you joined the Marines.
Yeah, it might have been later than more like 2010, but yeah, no, I did some time with the Marine Corps. Very limited service, thankfully. When I was younger, you know, wanting to go into it, it was all gun ho, I want to be a war hero. And then you see through training and all of the different things, they'll show you some pretty messed up videos. You're like, I don't want to go there. So, no, I was very lucky in my experiences as far as that was concerned. But, no, I did that. And then it was really nice because they did have the MCMAP, the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. So I got to green belt there, which is not a big deal because it just goes tan, green, brown, and black. And those are, like, your actual belt that you wear in your cami uniforms. So.
Oh, really? What's the Marine combat like? Is that... Was training and learning that as difficult as your judo training, or was it?
A lot of parallels, actually, mainly because a lot of it comes from judo. Because after World War II, the Marine Corps was the main force that led the campaign in the Pacific. So once we occupied, they signed that treaty, I can't remember the name, so that way the Japan can't have a standing army. They can only have the JNF, the Japanese National, or JDF or whatever, Japanese National Defense Force or something. Basically like the National Guard for them. They're not allowed to have an actual army. So it just made sense that a lot of the Marines were intermingling with all of the judo practitioners from the area. And a lot of it, and this is actually in the history of the MCMAP program when you learn about it, a lot of it comes from traditional Japanese judo teachings. So a lot of it was very interesting, but then you also have one of the first moves you learn is like an eye gouge, because it's not pretty stuff. Like, you're training a Marine not how to fight fair at all, so...
Well, I think what a lot of people forget about the Western martial arts now, today, because, you know, when the Western martial arts came to America, they were diluted and, like, very, not cosmetic, but they were very ritualized system. But those military systems, I mean, that's how judo was originally invented for war.
Oh, yeah. It was originally used by... samurais, and the whole
same with karate, which is now, you know, like,
exactly,
there's a karate dojo on every corner and you can buy a black belt for $20 if you want.
I freaking hate that. Those, whenever you see black belt academy, it's like, oh, so you're trash.
But you know, people forget that these systems that were originally designed to kill people, to at least fight other people in armor with, you know, like these weren't. There was a reason that they were around. It wasn't just for fun.
It was an absolute necessity kind of thing. 100%.
And now it's just fun. Now we just play.
Exactly. Now I'm just going to judo tournament. Well, I was going to judo tournaments and competing, getting into fights there. It's a safer environment, kids.
But I do think people forget that. Like even Taekwondo, which when
God.
I mean, as a boxer or a kickboxer.
Yeah.
Watching Taekwondo, I'm just like, oh my God, put your hands up.
Yeah, seriously. I can't believe I've seen so many kids get knocked out by like Muay Thai practitioners in Taekwondo tournaments, and they're wearing like that full headgear, and dude just does like snaps like a front kick, like just right to the dude's chin. And he's like, ooh.
But when you understand kind of where it came from, and like, yeah, the when you look at sport judo, they keep their hands down, and a lot of the sport karate, they keep their hands down too. But that wasn't how it was when they were, you know, when it was a military situation.
Right.
That's just how what it's become over time.
Absolutely. I mean, you just look at like, like nowadays karate versus like the traditional like Kyokushin karate, the way they train over in Japan when they're doing that, they're like just putting their hands up behind their heads and they're just getting blasted in the midsection with kicks, punches. I'm like, that's their core work. That's what they do. They're freaking crazy, man.
Yeah, I'm not really about that.
No, I'm all set. I actually had a friend. Oh my God. I had a friend who used to love to do kendo and karate and stuff, and he was all about like, hey, let's spar. And I'm like, all right, man, like, sure, you're gonna waste me. We're specifically talking about like a kendo sparring, and we were using like bokens. I don't know if you know what a boken is versus a shinai.
Nope.
So a boken is a solid piece of wood that's shaped in the form of a katana. Whereas a shinai is that traditional, like you've seen probably in movies and stuff. It's four slats of bamboo with some cowhide wrapped around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all put in, it's kind of like, not all the way around it, but it's like in a few spots that kind of hold it together and makes that like snapping sound.
Yep.
We were using, when you compete, you fight with the shinais, which are those lighter weight bamboo ones, versus the bokens are used for like training, throwing, like, you know, swinging, striking. We were using those things. My knuckles, man.
Never again. I only know this, or this only popped in my head because you said this, but there was I'm sure you know who Musashi was. Miyamoto.
Oh, yeah.
He actually, so he had been in over 100 duels with the katana.
Mm-hmm.
In around number 30, because he was like the greatest samurai, the greatest sword fighter to ever live.
So dope.
In the samurai tradition, and he, after like 30 fights, he switched over from using his swords to using his boken.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you think about how fucked up that is, because in the samurai culture, if you lose a fight, you have to kill yourself.
Yep.
So 100%. He rather than kill them honorably, like, he would beat
force
the hell
them
out with a stick, and then they would have to kill themselves.
Yep. Because they were always, it's crazy to think about, because they're always, like, duels of honor.
It's so fucked up.
Oh, God. He actually messed a dude up with a freaking boat oar.
Yeah. I know that there's all kinds of crazy myths and legends. It's hard to tell really what's real.
Of course. Yeah.
Because it was so long ago. But I know that, like, one, he was, like, supposed to be the best, but he wasn't a, like, samurai in the traditional sense. Like, he was not, he looked like a dirty homeless person. And he would just, like, go, like, very unkempt all the time, which was, and, like, would have food stains on him and stuff. And he would, there was a story of him where he was getting rowed out to an island to fight a guy, and he fell asleep in the boat.
Seriously.
And then woke up and was, like, they were, like, do you want to, like, take a minute, wake up? And he was, like, nah, I'm good. And then he just went out and fucked the dude up.
Because that's how Musashi gets down, right?
It's wild. It's fucking wild. And to do that 100 times, too.
Oh, like, I can never put myself in, like, legitimate harm's way that many times. There's no way.
No, Well, I guess when you're that good, it's not really putting yourself.
True. True. That's you bring a good point up. I mean, when you're that badass.
I mean, I'm sure Mike Tyson in his prime wouldn't think twice about that fucking.
Ooh, you just got me hyped up about Tyson. You've seen some of his new stuff, him hitting the bags. He looks dangerous. He looks deadly, bro.
It's so good. He's going to absolutely. I don't know. He's fighting Sugar Ray, right?
Yeah.
Or no, Roy Jones?
No. Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah. It's good. That's going to be a fucking fight.
Yeah. So, well, because what was Roy Jones Jr.'s last fight? Like 2015?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm actually a little bit worried because I didn't think Roy Jones held up as well as Tyson.
Well, he had a lot more fights, too. I know that.
And I just feel like the last time I saw a video of him, he wasn't looking very in shape.
His chin's not where it was before. I mean, me saying this, I'm not an analyst or anything, but I mean, just from a fan's perspective, it looks a lot like he's not a super, he just doesn't have the same kind of, I guess, constitution or endurance in that regard.
No, I mean, he's getting old.
They're both in their 50s, right? So, I mean, come on. But yeah, seeing Tyson hit the bag and just hit mitts and stuff, I was just like, good Lord. I got chills the first time I saw it with his like big old overgrown gray beard.
Oh, he's a he's still a terrifying human.
He's a killer, man. He's a killer. That guy is just so dangerous.
It's crazy though that boxing is in such a state that the most exciting thing going on is fucking two old guys fighting.
I know, and what was it, how long ago was Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, number two?
It was, like, a few months ago, and, like, I like seeing the heavyweight division kind of open up a little bit, but it's just, like, I'm glad Klitschko lost the title, because, like, it opened up the heavyweight division, but, like, just not seeing all these guys, they just seem like they're afraid to fight each other, like,
Well, it's because you see these guys walk out. Like, for example, like that fight, right? That Wilder-Fury fight. Wilder went out there with this freaking elaborate 40-pound freaking outfit that he says that he got gassed with his legs because of that after the fight. He was saying that that's why he got just bullied by Fury, which, I mean, he bullied him. Nobody had ever done that before to Wilder. He was just...
That was surprising to see. And it was actually – that was a fucking good fight because it went back and forth.
It did. Yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean, I feel like Fury, like, when just looking at him, he didn't take any damage. Like, I mean, he took some shots, obviously, but, like, he was fresh. Like, I feel like he could have gone another, like, five rounds with another fresh opponent right then and there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, Fury's boxing was far and away better than Wilder's. Wilder was always that weird puncher. He was always, like – very weird style, but yeah.
Well, he's got that thunder in his hands too. He's got
he's always dangerous.
Yeah, never. You can never count out a guy like him.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. But he definitely got handled.
I
don't know. We'll see. Cause like Joshua is just a fucking specimen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Joshua could beat Wilder though. I think Wilder would beat Joshua.
Well, and that's a stylistic matchup too. I mean, that's one of the beautiful, like that's why we're sitting here talking about this for so long, is because martial arts and just, you know, fighting arts in general is just such a beautiful thing because you have so many different styles and techniques and matchups, and with like this guy beating this guy, putting them up against to each other, it's seeing how one person's will goes up against another, but not just that, like, I mean, this guy smashed this dude, but at the same time, is he going to be able to hack it with this guy, you know, because he throws that crazy left from way outside? Yeah, I love that stuff, man.
I think Joshua is just so used to being the biggest, you know? I don't know. I don't think that Joshua would be able to beat Wilder. I think Wilder would beat Joshua, but I don't know. Tyson Fury, I think, is probably the top of the division right now, but he's fucking old, isn't he? Isn't he, like, way older than him?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. But.
Yeah, I'm talking out of my ass, so that might not be right. But I feel like he's a lot older than everybody else because he was a champion. He had won a title at one point and then, like, went on a fucking binge and, like, lost it. They, like, stripped it. They stripped it from him for a while.
Oh,
right?
Really? He just wouldn't compete?
This was years and years ago. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, now, yeah, I only started getting into, like, watching boxing, like, hardcore, like, maybe, like, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I actually am kind of going the other direction. Like, I used to be really into it, and then now I'm a lot less into it.
Yeah.
It's too hard to keep up with. There's too many fighters.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a great thing.
No, it is. It's just hard to keep, because, like, I used to keep track of MMA, boxing, kickboxing. I used to watch karate. I used to watch fucking, you know, I used to watch a lot of combat sports. You know, I would make time to watch the sumo championships every year. I would make time.
Sumo, bro. I love sumo.
I just loved martial arts, so I would make a lot. I just kept track of them, and now I just don't have time. And, like, if I can't keep track of it all, then it's too confusing.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Right there with you. I don't even watch much sports anymore. I know the Patriots won, and that Tom Brady's Buccaneers lost. He threw two interceptions, but I didn't really watch that at all.
I actually have never watched football.
Never.
I just find it very boring. But I do think it's hilarious that Tom Brady left and now everybody hates him now. I fucking love it.
I don't hate him at all, dude. It's a freaking business decision. The guy wants to get another 5 years out of his career. He wasn't going to get that with the Patriots.
Nah, he abandoned him. Fuck him.
You think so?
Hell yeah. It's just like
It's
just like when Johnny Damon left the Red Sox. Like, you can't, you absolutely have to hate him now. I love that. I think that's one of the coolest things about sports is, like, you have your team, and then, like, your team is your team. It doesn't matter. Like, you love them, no matter what. And anyone who's not your team, you have to hate them.
I know.
Like,
well,
it's just binary. I love it. And there's no reason behind it.
No, I absolutely. I'm a bit of a traitor myself because, sure, I grew raised and born and raised here, but in New Hampshire. But I'm not at all a Boston Bruins fan. I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan.
A great example would be if Wilder and Joshua fought. Even if I thought Joshua was the better fighter, there's no way I could say that because I'm Team America.
Fair enough.
So you always have to stick with your team. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When he fought...
And if not, you're going to get vitriol from everybody.
And you should. And it's justified. I don't root for China in the Olympics. I root for America, goddammit.
You're goddamn right.
All right, buddy.
All the way.
We're coming up at the end of this. You did awesome.
Yeah, appreciate it. That was good.
Where can everybody find you? Sorry we went off on a tangent also. I hope you guys like fighting.
Yeah, I know, right? Like all these people. No, people can find me right now on Instagram, Steel Elements Fabrication. There's an underscore in between all those. I post a lot of content on there. That's a really good way if you wanted to reach out to me for commission or anything. If there's an idea you have in your head and you don't really quite sure where it's going to go, even if it's just a splurt, just hit me up and we'll work something out. I love trying new things. And yeah, that's pretty soon I'll get a website up and everything. But it's a pretty new venture for me. But yeah, on Instagram, it's Steel Elements Fabrication where I'm at.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
No, man, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I had an absolute blast.
I did too. I'll talk to you soon.